Who you are and who you can be emerges from the ashes of what you've been through. That's the basic thesis I want to advance this morning. Who you are and who you can be emerges from the ashes of what you've been through. But before I totally unpack that, let's back up a little bit. Today we're at part three in a sermon series called Help When It Hurts. It's the final installment. Because let's be honest, life does hurt, and we've been talking about that, and the list goes on and on. There are worries or disappointments or challenging relationships that are breaking down or illness or, you know, mourning and grief or various reasons to stay awake and worry at 3 a.m., right? And the Bible takes these hurts seriously. And in fact, the Bible presumes that life will be difficult, not a cakewalk at all. I thought of, when I was preparing this sermon this week, I thought of the famous Forrest Gump from the movie Forrest Gump, when he said, you know, life is like a box of chocolates. You never know. Yeah, that's right. You know it. You never know what you're going to get. And I get what he's trying to get at, that life has a certain amount of uncertainty and unpredictability, that sort of thing. But of course, you can you can count on taxes, you know, things like that. But you can also count on hurts and challenges in your life. Well, the good news is that although none of us are offered a free pass, we are promised God's presence and help through the pain. And so that's what we're exploring here. And so who is the series for? If you have hurt, it's for you. If you are hurting, it's for you. If you could hurt at some point in the future, then this is for you as well. And theoretically, that could be all of us. So as we go into this part three, I'm going to remind us again of these six guiding principles that have been kind of shepherding us along. And, you know, I won't explore them fully and unpack them fully. They could each be their own sermon unto themselves. But I'm just inviting us to keep these things in mind so that we have a broader perspective and thinking when it comes to our hurts. One, the Bible presumes that life will often hurt. Right? It presumes this. This is the presumption. So, you know, of the 150 Psalms, by one scholar's estimation, almost half of those are Psalms of lament, meaning people calling out and crying out to God for help in the midst of their situation in life. Number two, the presence of pain does not equal the absence of God. The presence of pain does not equal the absence of God. And it's good to reiterate and focus on this, especially in this time that we live in. Because, you know, we live in this time of the quick fix, of comfort, of convenience. And all of a sudden these hurts come along in our life and it's like we're surprised by them. And we think that, oh, well, maybe God isn't there or God isn't doing a good job. But that's a faulty premise. Look at the prophets. Look at the Apostle Paul. You know, they dealt with hurts and pain and difficulty in their life. And Jesus, who is also experienced pain and hurt, and he was God in the flesh, incarnate, walking in our midst. So, you know, and God was obviously present with them. I heard this quote this week from Jed Wilhite, who's a pastor in Las Vegas. And he says, God rarely gets the credit when things are going well. But he often gets blamed when times are tough. how true is that? Okay, number three, wanting and seeking help is not being unfaithful. Wanting and seeking help is not being unfaithful, right? So sometimes you're struggling with something and maybe you've said something to someone else or they've said it to you that hey, you just got to trust God more, you know? And friends, sometimes it's said with good intentions, but we all need to trust God more all the time, regardless of what we're dealing with. So we may need to trust God more, but reaching out for help isn't a sign of unfaithfulness. And in fact, it's very honest. And as I've said before, I think quite often it takes a lot of strength to acknowledge you need to reach out for help for something, maybe talk to a friend or, you know, see a Christian therapist or something, you know, and really we're breaking the illusion of our own self-sufficiency when we need help. See, our culture preaches at us all the time. Oh, you know, you can do it on your own and by yourself. And, you know, you're strong enough. None of us are strong enough. You know, these are all lies that aren't helpful. Four, hurt is a part of life, but it doesn't need to be the defining part. And we'll go into that a bit more next week. Five, pain isn't always, sorry, we'll go into that this week. Five, pain isn't always pointless. Right? And let me be clear. So when I say this, it doesn't mean that all pain is good. And there's pain that you've experienced or I've experienced that we would not want to wish on other people. And so I'm not saying that pain in itself is good, but there can be a redeeming value to it, sometimes. So redeeming value, meaning that God can work even in the midst of our challenges and difficulties and bring good out of a difficult situation. I read the story about a boy who was 7 wrestling outside with his cousin, got kicked in the gut, like really seriously, it was an accident, but really seriously, rushed to the hospital, did a bunch of tests, and through those tests, they discovered that the boy had a tumor in his stomach. And so they were able to treat it, and he's, you know, robust and able to, you know, play football and stuff now. But, you know, they look back on that and say, you know what, if that original kick in the gut didn't happen, we wouldn't have discovered this tumor. And so they saw it as a positive thing. So I'm not going to apply that exact logic to every situation we face, but I do think it's a helpful story because it reminds us that sometimes we need to have this bigger perspective about the challenges that we face and the possibilities before us. And number 6, we need a more mature approach to hardship. We need a more mature approach to hardship. So that's what we're talking about. So quick recap, part 1, 2 weeks ago, we looked at Psalm 80. We talked about the importance of being with someone, journeying with someone through the difficulties we face. So walking with God, walking with God's people. And we talked about what that might look like. Part 2, last week, we looked at Psalm 37 and settled here that you need a godly purpose in your life to offset the pain in your life. So if you think about it like this, if you've got some hurt or some real difficulty, it's so powerful. It has the potential to take over your mind. And so you're thinking about it all the time. It takes over your life. But if you have this godly purpose in your life and you've got something that you feel called to do and you are focused on it and God, you know, you're honoring God through it and you're serving and helping other people through this thing, that in a sense is also in your mind and it competes with the negative stuff. And so it kind of like it offsets it because it competes for the brain space in your mind. And so does it make all your problems go away? No, but it offsets it because you've also got this godly focus to focus on. So with those things in mind, today we're looking at Psalm 143. Okay, it's a Psalm of David. It's a lament psalm, so calling out to God for help. And just as we prepare to read, I want us to keep us a few things in mind, okay? We need to keep some stuff in mind. One is that hurts change us. Hurts change us whether we like it or not, okay? So we've had some hurt, some difficulty, some challenge. Maybe someone has hurt us in a way and we carry an invisible scar or a burden or something like that. You know, once bitten, twice shy, you know, that it changes us. So, but here's the question that all of us need to ask ourselves. It's this. Are you going to let your hurts change you for better or for worse? They're going to change us. So what role might we have to play in letting them change us for better instead of for worse? Get this. So psychologist Jonathan Haidt writes this. I'll put it up here on the screen. People need adversity, setbacks, and perhaps even trauma to reach the highest levels of fulfillment and personal development. Wow. That's really significant. They need these things to reach a high level of personal development. No, I don't want that to be true. I don't want adversity. I don't want setbacks. I don't want even trauma, you know. However, this is, and those of us who've lived long enough to have been through some stuff know that quite often this is true. You know, how many of us can look at some hurt or difficulty experience that we've encountered in life and we say, you know what, that was really hard, but it made me stronger, or it made me more humble, or it made me more resourceful, or it made me wiser, or it made me more compassionate, right? So this is an example of maybe kind of being open to how these difficult experiences might change us in a positive way. Here's another one. This is from Scripture, James 1, verses 2 to 3. So this is written to a broad audience in the New Testament. It says it's one of the hardest verses in the Bible. Consider it pure joy, my brothers and sisters, whenever you face trials of many kinds, because you know that the testing of your faith produces perseverance. Wow. That's hard, especially when you're in the midst actually of dealing with something difficult. He says, consider pure joy when you face these trials because the testing of your faith produces perseverance, or as some translations say, produce steadfastness. And I read a story about this missionary who was in jail, suffering for his faith. He had the clothes on his back, reading his Bible, and he came across this verse and it made him so mad. He took his Bible and he threw it against the wall. He's like, what, God, are you serious? It's hard. And it wasn't until years later where he was able to look back and say, you know what, that wasn't a good experience, but God used it to produce endurance, steadfastness in who I am and in my faith. So hurts can change us. And so the question we need to ask is, are they going to be for better? That change going to be for better or for worse? And so as we read this, we are advancing this main thesis that who you are and who you can be emerges from the ashes of what you've been through. And the specific question, as we unearth this, is how does David envision personal change in the midst of his hardship? So how does David envision personal change in the midst of his hardship? And then we're going to look at three things and apply them to ourselves. So let's go through this. I'm reading from the NIV version. If you've got your Bible, I encourage you to open it, and it'll be up here in this. The words will be up here in the screen as well. Lord, hear my prayer. So the personal name for God, Yahweh, hear my prayer. Listen to my cry for mercy, and your faithfulness and righteousness come to my relief. So this is a guy who's really desperate. This is a guy, he needs mercy, right? This is a guy who he knows he's not strong enough or smart enough to get out of this jam, whatever it is, by himself. In your faithfulness, in your righteousness, come to my relief. So because you are good and you are righteous, come down and rescue little old me, God, because I need you. Verse 2, do not bring your servant referring to himself, do not bring your servant into judgment, for no one living is righteous before you. He's saying, Lord, don't judge me based on my own actions, because I know that I am flawed and I am not righteous before you. You know, save me and be merciful to me out of your own goodness. And it actually reminds us of what the Apostle Paul says, right? In Romans chapter 3, verse 23, when he says, you know, for all have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. The enemy pursues me. He crushes me to the ground. Verse 3. Again, we're never told in the psalm the nature of the enemy, but he feels pursued, crushes me to the ground. He makes me dwell in the darkness like those long dead. So here he employs the image of darkness, right? Physical darkness, maybe. Metaphorical darkness, probably. Right? Because those of us who have gone through things know that darkness is a good metaphor for how we feel. You feel like there isn't light, there isn't hope in darkness, and it's this very negative place. He makes me to dwell in the darkness like those long dead, so my spirit grows faint within me. My heart within me is dismayed, right? His heart is dismayed. This is a guy at the bottom. And then all of a sudden, an attitudinal change happens in verse 5. It changes. He tries something new. Verse 5, I remember the days of long ago. I meditate on all your works and consider what your hands have done. So here he's consciously having an attitudinal change. He's trying to remember back, to think back upon all the good things that God has done and all the ways he's been good to him. And he wants to meditate on those things. And here the word meditate really means like thinking about, proactively thinking about and considering all the works and consider what your hands have done. So the reason that's an attitudinal change is he knows that he's in this dark place. His spirit is fainting, as he's saying, which he means he's really low. But he goes out of his way to think about all the ways that God has been good to him in the past. And because God's character is consistent, he knows that God must therefore also be being good and providing for him in the present, in his current situation, even though he feels like he's in darkness. And that gives him greater confidence that God is going to be acting that way in the future too. Verse 6, I spread out my hands before you. I thirst for you like a parched land. Like a parched land. Now, you got to remember, this is an agrarian society. They're really tied to the ground and to the earth. And so much more so than we are today. So today we can refrigerate food and keep it, and there's preservatives and everything else. Not so in the ancient world. So like if there wasn't rain and like the crops and the animals weren't getting well fed and watered from the sky, people died, crops died, animals died. And so he's putting himself in that position with his hands open. He's like, I thirst for you like a parched land. I need you, because by myself, death will be inevitable. Verse 7, answer me quickly, Lord Yahweh. My spirit fails. Do not hide your face from me, or I will be like those who go down to the pit. Verse 8, let the morning bring me word of your unfailing love. So there the morning counters the previous image of darkness. Morning brings light, relief, hope for a new day, a new start, right? Let the morning bring me word of your unfailing love, for I have put my trust in you. And then here's another attitudinal change. He's not only in the darkness as a spirit falling, he's trying with this attitudinal change to remember how God has been good in the past and will continue to be good. And, you know, he then is like, I want you to grow me, to change me, to make me more faithful through this experience. So what does he say? Show me the way I should go, for to you I entrust my life. Rescue me from my enemies, Lord, for I hide myself in you. And then again, he says, teach me to do your will, for you are my God. So people who are unteachable are people who think they already know everything. People who are unteachable are people who think that they're strong and they can get out of every jam they encounter by themselves. Not so with David. May your good spirit, this is 10b, may your good spirit lead me on level ground. Level ground. And in the biblical imagination, this word is used really to mean what it suggests. Level ground, faithfulness, walking forward, journeying behind God in faithfulness, right? And so as opposed to like getting off track and going into the ditch and getting covered in muck, right? Level ground. Verse 11, for your name's sake, Lord, preserve my life. In your righteousness, bring me out of trouble. And this is kind of echoes verse 1. In your unfailing love, silence my enemies, destroy all my foes, for I am your servant. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. Okay, so we've been asking, how does David envision personal change in the midst of his hardship? Three things. One, David recognizes, friends, he is totally dependent on God for help. He's totally, why do we know that? Because the text tells us, verse 1, listen to my cry for mercy. Verse 4, my spirit grows faint within me. Verse 7, answer me quickly, Lord. My spirit fails. Do not hide your face from me, or I will be like those who go down to the pit. Right? Like, this is a guy desperate. God, he is growing in humility and humbleness here because he knows that he cannot do it by himself. The illusion of his own self-sufficiency and strength has been shattered. I read about a man talking to his pastor going through a difficult time. Himself was going through the darkness. He said, I always knew in principle that Jesus is all you need to get through, but you don't really know Jesus is all you need until Jesus is all you have. So let's apply this to us, to allow your hurts to change you for the better, not for worse. Recognize that you are totally dependent upon God for help. You got to break the illusion of your own self-sufficiency. The writer Philip Yancey wrote, human beings do not readily admit desperation. When they do, the kingdom of heaven draws near. I love that, right? When we're desperate, you know, we become more humble. We're on our knees. We know that we need help from an outside source. And in those moments, we are inviting God to come in and powerfully work in our lives. Cultivate humility. Number two, David intentionally recalls, and this is from verse 5, when he says, I remember the days of long ago. I meditate on all your works and consider what your hands have done. Because of that, point number two, David intentionally recalls God's past goodness to remind himself about God's present goodness, which acts as a kind of trump card over the deceptiveness of his feelings. Right, so he's cultivating gratitude. He's trying to be aware of the good God has done, is therefore doing, because God's character is consistent, and the good that God will do. He's trying to grow his own awareness of gratitude here, which serves as a kind of trump card against the deceptiveness of his feelings. Now, don't get me wrong. Feelings can be helpful, right? They help us know, like, hey, what's going on inside me? Maybe I need to pay attention to something. But feelings are not God, and in this sense, they can be deceptive, because they don't necessarily reflect what is true in terms of a broader scope. And so to allow your hurts to change you for the better, not worse, trust God's goodness to you more than your feelings. Let your feelings inform what you're going through. Maybe they tell you you need to go get some help or you're struggling with a certain issue, but they don't necessarily reflect the greater reality. And so we cultivate gratitude by trusting God's goodness past, present, even when we can't feel it, even in the midst of what we think is darkness in the future. Number three, David asked God for growth, guidance, and level ground, trusting that he will do it. I love that. This is the second attitudinal shift in the psalm. He says, verse 8, show me the way I should go, for to you I entrust my life. This is a guy dealing with enemies and darkness and his spirit failing and everything else. And he's like, show me the way I should go. He wants to be grown in his faith and guided on level ground. And then verse 10, teach me to do your will. Lead me on level ground. I love that. So to allow your hurts to change you, we're making it personal for better, not worse. Ask God for growth, guidance, and level ground, trusting that he will do it. Ask God for in the midst of the what you're experiencing, fiery ordeal that you're experiencing, he will still give you growth, guidance, and level ground through it, trusting that God will act and is acting through that process. So who you are and who you can be, my friends, emerges from the ashes of what you've been through. And we've said, A, recognize you are totally dependent on God for help, which really is what cultivates humility within us. B, trust God's goodness toward you more than your feelings. Right, and this helps us be people of gratitude. C, ask God to grow for growth, guidance, and level ground, trusting that he will do it. Friends, imagine something with me. Imagine that a future you, and you've gone through some really difficult things, coming up through the ashes of what you've been through, and you have paid particular attention to these things, and people see you living a certain kind of life, and you experience the inner joy and contentment of living a certain life, and people come to you for advice, or you interact with people, and this is the you they see. Listen to this. First of all, they know you're dependent upon God, and you are a humble person. Regardless of what you've been through, despite and even because of what you've been through, you know what it's like to be on your knees, and that has made you humble. So you're not pretentious. You're not holier than thou. You're not judgmental towards other people. You're this humble people who is able to be open with your experiences, right? Notice ever when you're talking with someone and someone says that you're explaining a problem or a challenge or a hurt that you've had. And if someone says, you know what, I've had a similar experience, and they kind of say, all of a sudden you incline your ear a little bit more because, you know, they can maybe relate to you. And all of a sudden what they say, maybe sometimes depending on the personality, has a bit more clout in terms of what they're saying. You lean into the wisdom or what the advice they're going to share. And so you could be in those situations a person of humility, right? Another thing, okay, let's imagine that you're a person of gratitude too, and you were able to be grateful for the goodness that God has had in your past. You're aware of God's goodness in your present, even though you can't always see it or feel it, and you trust that that will be there in the future. Imagine being that kind of person. Third, imagine that people know you to be, and you know you to be, someone who is continually growing because you want that level ground, just as David prayed. You want to be taught God's will. Show me the way I should go, he said in verse 8b. Right? And you're known to be someone who is continually trying to learn from God's wisdom in the scriptures and be open to the Spirit, to the growth that is happening in your life. That would be amazing. Imagine being that person emerging from the ashes of what you've been through, because it's possible, friends. Hurt is a part of life, but it doesn't need to be the defining part. You are not defined by your past. You are defined by God, and the future belongs to him. Let me share this final word this morning in this message. Back in May 2007, Science Buzz had an article titled, Rising from the Ashes, Forest Fires Give Way to New Growth. And so that's why our main point there up on the screen is backed by this picture of a forest fire. It said, quote, the recent forest fires in North Minnesota have scorched a huge chunk of the Superior National Forest, but they're also the beginning of the next generation of huge trees to grow in the wild. Even as the fires were crackling through the branches of pines, birch, and spruce, the start of new tree growth was already popping. The heat from the burning trees pops, opens the cones on those trees, releasing seeds that have been waiting to get loose for years. Millions of those seeds were dumped on the forest floor, and within less than a month, a fraction of those seeds began to germinate, pop through the soil, and start growing into little seedlings. In fact, fire is a natural part of the forest's regeneration system. Huh. Ever heard of going through a fiery ordeal? It goes on. University of Minnesota Duluth biology professor John Pastor was quoted this week. Honestly, his name is John Pastor. I'm not making this up. In the Star Tribune saying, when people canoe through the Boundary Waters canoe area and see all these beautiful forests, every one of those forests started with a fire. Every one of those forests started with a fire, end quote. Huh. Friends, who you are and who you can be emerges through the ashes of what you've been through. And as we bring this three-part series to a close, I hope it's been helpful. Let me just reiterate that none of us gets a free pass, but God promises to be with us and to give us help through the pain. Hurt is a part of life. It does not need to be the defining part. Who you are and who you can be emerges from the ashes of what you've been through. Amen.